that even.
...14th, 2012, to order. And let's start with a pledge to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. May we have a roll call, Madam Clerk?
Commissioner Sheeler?
Present.
Commissioner Solomon? Commissioner West? Vice Chair Stapleman? Chair Wallace?
Here. Before we get into our meeting, I think we'd all like to say a special congratulations to Vice Chair Stapleman at the birth of her first grandchild, a little girl. And Commissioner, I hope you'll please bring back some pictures and good stories to share with us. So. Well, at least one slice of cake, please. And we'll begin with the public forum, where anyone wishing to speak on an item not on tonight's agenda has the opportunity to do so. And I don't believe we have any speaker slips.
That's correct.
It would be a little strange if we did, since we have few people in our audience. Okay, so let's move along. Are there any amendments or adjustments to our agenda?
No, Madam Chairman, there are not.
Okay. Then, Madam Clerk, if we'll just move right into the first item, a matter of minutes.
Item A1 is the Planning Commission minutes for the Planning Commission meeting of April 23rd, 2012.
All right.
Motion to approve.
I'll second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That is a unanimous vote. And then our next item, Madam Clerk.
Item B is a presentation, B1, Municipal Energy Savings Analysis.
All right. And that's by our staff members, Mr. Adamitis and Ms. Wells. So please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Wallace and Commissioner. Tonight I have the pleasure of presenting to you the city's first energy audit for city facilities and operations. And this effort has been conducted over the last 6 months, and there's been a number of technical consultants that have supported us. Some of them are here, some of them aren't, and I wanted to introduce some of them to you. We have Maruja Clense, who's a contract planner, who's assisting with this effort overall, and a number of other advanced planning items that kind of relate to energy efficiency. And then we also have Perrin Pellegrin from Innovative Workshops, and her specialty is sustainability, LEED certification, energy efficiency. She's from UCSB Sustainability School, and she's a pro, so she's been integral into helping move this project along. And then we also have Rosemary Law, who's in our audience, and she's with Property Development Services, and she's going to be helping us and helping you later on a training program that will enable, or basically it's an educational program for the Planning Commission, the City Council, and then other officials in our community to conduct audits and do the technical part of looking at energy efficiencies and developing plans and strategies. And of course, we're all guided by Vito Adamitis, who has been instrumental in keeping this project going, along with a separate path of a climate action plan, and then somehow managing to install new lights here at City Hall, new street lights, and we'll go into more detail on some of that, but he's been really great at keeping these balls up in the air and in motion. So that's our team that's here for you tonight to assist with this item, and it's a presentation. So we're really trying to inform you and help you understand sort of why are we doing this, why now, how are we funding this, and how did we do it? What does it mean? And then sort of the next step. So we chose to do a presentation because there's really not any kind of action item that we're asking from you tonight. What it is we want to use this as a platform so that some of the technical terms and some of this base information can be digested over time so that when we bring you the plan that has sort of the savings analysis and you'll understand what that means, the components of the plan in August, you'll have a better foundation of understanding for the decisions that you'll be making that evening. So with that, I'm just going to start, and it is a presentation. If you have questions, there's 28 slides. You just interject, and we'll be presenting together, so we'll be doing some back and forth. But we do shift. There's three major sections of this, so when we shift into a new section, if you have a question, don't hesitate to stay and ask questions in context with the subject area. So a little bit of background just for the really big picture context. California's emissions represent about 2% of the total worldwide contribution. And within California, 38% of the emissions come from transportation. And that is why our regulatory setting here in California has aggressively looked at transportation and reducing the emissions, specifically the greenhouse gases. And that's the AB 32, Assembly Bill 32, and then is looking at the fuels. And then Senate Bill 375 is looking at the transportation and land use and housing. So we're looking at it kind of from all sectors. And what we're focusing on our energy audit is just one slice of that pie, and that's the electricity section or portion of the pie. That's the subject of tonight's presentation and also will be the subject of the future plan that you will be receiving from us in August. We'll be looking at the entire pie after we do the Energy Efficiency Action Plan. So if you were to take all the greenhouse gases in the city of Goleta, and which we have the data for emissions within the city of Goleta, the city hall or the city municipal operations and facilities represents a very small portion of that total source of emissions. And as you can see from the slide, I don't have the percentage, but it's just a fraction. But the reason that this is sort of, I don't want to say, it's a little irrelevant, because what we're really trying to do here is lead by example. And as we lead by example and as we demonstrate how things are improved from an energy efficiency perspective, and showing success is the way that we make changes that can affect the rest of that pie. And so from that sliver that I showed you on that last slide, the emissions that are generating it are from the library, from the community center, from City Hall, from the corporate yard, and then from the Stowe Grove Park. And we'll go over those a little bit more, too. Go ahead.
Maybe this isn't the right time, but I had a question regarding that. As you've broken it into these different components, did you also take into account streetlights, traffic signals?
Yes.
Okay.
And we will go into those into more detail. Thanks. In a little bit. I'm just trying to give you a big picture of, yeah, as we go forward. So you can kind of see, you know, where we're using a lot of the big electricity sinks are from the library and the community center and City Hall. And so that's been the focus of some of our strategies.
On the Goleta Library, I mean, that's 62% of the total. Is that primarily due to the age of the building and its construction status, or are there other factors?
There are a lot of factors, including the old computers and the old lights and the old roof and the old building. But we've since replaced the roof. So what this is showing up here is 2007.
Okay.
So it's not reflecting the improvements that have been done since 2007 that have had a big change. Just the roof alone. And those are the kind of examples that we want to show you in the audit of, you know, where it is as of 2007, which I'll go over in a minute, which is our baseline, and how something simple as a roof can make a huge change in your energy efficiency.
Did we replace the air conditioning?
We did.
Also?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right? Did I say that right?
The HVAC replacement is actually for the community center.
Oh, see?
We've only done the cool roof for the library.
That's why I have them here. Can't keep it all straight.
Thank you.
So going back into why are we doing the energy savings analysis, I think I just already mentioned AB 32 and Senate Bill 375. And then there's also Senate Bill 97 that is important to keep in mind because that has to do with the California Environmental Quality Act and the way it addresses greenhouse gas impacts. So for us to know what our baseline is and for us to know what we're projecting with our growth, then we can have we're in a better position to write our environmental documents. So this is assisting us on multiple levels from a legislation standpoint. Our general plan also requires that we do this inventory, and that was part of our general plan update in 2009. And then the audit is required under our grant that we have with Southern California Edison, and there are several components of that grant. And I think you've already heard from one component, which is the Green Building Program, and then there's this portion, which includes an audit and then an energy efficiency action plan, and then some training. And so we'll talk about the training a little bit in the PowerPoint. But really what this is doing for us is it's helping us understand where we're using our electricity. And that helps us make better decisions. Knowledge is so helpful in how we use our dollars in this economic time. And knowing how something is paid off in the future will help our capital improvement program, will help us decide go, no-go decisions on certain facilities when, and also will help us get access to grants. And I think I already said, too, that why are we doing this analysis? We're also leading by example. So we're demonstrating how it's being done so that other people may model a program similar to this when we're all finished. So the benefits, leading by example, improving our air quality because greenhouse gases are not desirable for our air quality, for our quality of life. It also is a foundation for a green economy, and the bottom line is it reduces our utility cost if you're doing it correctly. So we're going to talk about our audit methods and the results of those methods and how they build into a savings analysis. So this stuff is going to start to become more second nature to you and to our public. So the more we understand these terms, the better that future decision-making process will go. Meaning, you'll hear, we did audits of the building and we looked at ducts and things like that. So if somebody comes back and wants to replace a duct because it's inefficient, those will be kinds of things that will be more normal, like street paving and curbs and gutters. So that's where we're kind of headed in this audit method that we employed.
Ms. Wells, one question there. In our packet, does it display what the city's utility bill actually is on an annual basis?
We use a couple examples. The utility bill varies by facility, and even how much the electricity costs varies by facility and time. But we're keeping track of the electricity bills, and the city hall electric bill for any given year is approximately, Corinne, what was the number? I knew I was going to forget.
The total?
$20,000 a year?
Yes. total?
For the electric bill?
Yeah.
I believe so.
I think it was about $20,000 a year. And that was in 2007. So that was before we did all these retrofits. And we'll talk a little bit in the, about what the savings that we received from just replacing some lights and also the costs to do that project. So we'll get you a little bit of information now that when the audit's all done, there'll be more information about cost and savings. But we're just really trying to get you familiar with the terms and why we're doing this and how we did it.
Somewhere in the city's adopted budget, is there a line item for total expenditures on utilities? So that could all be put together for all the various facilities and put into just one total number so you would know how much the city is spending on utilities on an annual basis over time.
There's a line item for the electric bill, but it's a lot more complicated than you would think because the bill comes in, there's a bill for every streetlight, for example. So it's aggregated,
mm-hmm.
But when you break it down, as we have found, that it's a large stack of invoices every month.
And I was talking about the aggregated number just to know what the total number is of the city's utility bill so that when you start talking about percentage and decreases and reduced utility costs, we have some sort of scope
Correct.
To which to compare it.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So what did we look at in this audit? I am going to let Ms. Clenze, to my left, talk a little bit about the specific components of the energy audit and the way that we went into each facility. She's going to talk about the actual facilities and then the consultant that went in, and we escorted through each building to invest a lot of time looking in places and buildings that I didn't know existed. And Ms. Clenze will walk you through that.
Thank you, Ms. Wells. Chair Wallace and commissioners, as said, I'm Ms. Clenze, and I helped with the audit methods and results. And so as you see here on the slide before you, we looked at these topics and areas. While, for example, stationary combustion sources aren't prominent in the city of Goleta, the fact that we do not have any were considered as part of our audit, so it is a contributing factor because we do not have any. But, of course, basic utilities, water usage, our vehicle fleet usage, and whatnot. We audited eight municipal – I'm sorry.
Sorry, I wanted to just for a second, the landfill and waste generation. While we don't have a landfill in the city of Goleta, we do – produce waste, and then that's exported off. And that waste from a greenhouse gas audit perspective is considered ours. So just because a landfill is in the county doesn't mean that we don't own those greenhouse gas emissions.
And to continue, so we audited eight municipal facilities that are either currently owned or planned to be owned by the city in the next couple years, including Goleta City Hall, a corporate yard building, the rail station, the historic depot, as well as the Goleta Valley Community Center, the public library, Stowe Park, Rancho La Patera. So together with our primary consultant, ICF, in San Francisco and their subconsultant AESC, we conducted various surveys. They came and met with a variety of public utilities. They came to each facility and observed firsthand what was going on with our current energy utility systems. Met with staff at the community center, at the library. As I said, met with utilities. And combined with those surveys that they gave to city staff and these other representatives, I also assisted with telephone correspondence, email correspondence, and applicable online research as needed. So I was definitely a little professional nag in some people's inboxes and their emails as I emailed a lot of different people many times to get this data. This is an example of one of the surveys that AESC with ICF put together. Granted, it's not very legible as there's a lot going on here, but just as an example of a yes, no, and unsure kind of categories and whether or not the city would like these to be required, planned, likely for the city, or more of a stretch for the city. Ms. Wells?
So this This one example of a spreadsheet that we used for our questionnaire covers just one element of measures to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from municipal operations. So while on one hand we were doing the audit of facilities, at the same time we were giving them people questionnaires of if you, for facilities folks, people who run the facilities. So thank you for, you know, we would meet with them. Thank you for helping us understand your electrical energy use of the bond building, for example. We would run through these questionnaires with them in your, so that we knew what were they planning in 5 years. Were they planning on upgrades? So that's sort of the purpose of the questionnaire. And then for some things, you know, they hadn't thought of yet, we have them in the questionnaire and then had them answer, would you consider that? You know, maybe, unsure. And so all of that went into, you know, building the savings portion of the plan that we're still finalizing. But this questionnaire was sort of instrumental in that dialogue back and forth. And also it led to all those emails that Ms. Clenze was talking about, because one thought led to another thought, led to another thought. And it was amazing to watch how people are like, wow, that's actually, I just looked into something about the way you can do a roof. And so will you change that maybe to a yes? And because we have to, you know, they say we have to replace the roof anyway. So that was the kind of back and forth that's why it took 6 months, because of that back and forth. But I just wanted to, you know, stop and pause on that one slide because of the importance of it in our dialogue.
Thank you. So in regards to, I'm sorry?
Before we leave this, a previous slide and instruction says that we're dealing with the electricity usage. On this measures to reduce slide, there's something here near the bottom about transportation, and that's used for commuting. Is that, so how does that fit in with the audit if it focuses on electrical? Secondly, when you talk about the transportation issues, are you speaking of the personal commute data of our employees? Are you speaking of once we get all to work, what the city itself uses to conduct city business in the city?
Thank you, Chair Wells. I'm going to answer that question because I did those specific pieces of the questionnaire. So some of the sections on the questionnaire are for other sectors. So we, while we were trying to be as comprehensive as possible, since we knew that we had people's attention, so we covered, and I used an example that was more electricity focused, but I should have known your sharp eyes would catch that one. But there are some electrical applications of transportation, and it's a little bit tricky because if you're using a fuel-powered vehicle and you switch to like a plug-in, you may be using more electricity, but your net release of greenhouse gases is reduced. So there is overlap, but you do make a point that that piece actually, there's a piece of that line item that would be for the climate action plan.
You know, I'm happy to see the question here about transportation, and I just wanted to know how the answers might be fitting in, and now I see that might be used later. So, okay.
And the transportation demand management, that is the actual city's TDM. So we're using real time numbers on that.
I would like to comment on that. Madam Chair and members of the Commission, in the city's TDM program, we do log in anything related to flexible scheduling, carpooling, and ride sharing, and those miles that each employee reduces in by using some of these other efforts are quantified in terms of greenhouse gas emissions that are reduced. And so part of, at the very top of this table, it shows measures to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from municipal operations. Mm-hmm. So employees who are engaging in telecommuting or ride sharing are actually helping to quantify some of those reductions in greenhouse gas. And I am proud to say I'm one of those.
Good.
And I'm able to log in whenever we do a telecommute day. And it actually shows you when you log in, it quantifies how many pounds of greenhouse gas, you know, contaminants and others that you actually save by doing that. So it's actually pretty cool.
Very interesting. Thank you.
And now with the motion detectors in our offices, when Mr. Adamidis isn't here, his light doesn't go on. It may otherwise if someone went in and turned the light on to use it and forgot to turn it off. But now it turns off. So we're saving electricity, really, when someone is working from home.
All right, good.
All right, to continue on, so regarding those topics that we saw before and the buildings and facilities that we looked at, we spoke to a variety of city departments and individuals from those departments, such as Ann Wells for the advanced planning, Claudia Dato and Vito from Neighborhood Services, Bill Millar from Parks, Bob Morgenstein from Public Works, Cindy Moore from Planning and Environmental Services, and Everett King and Marty Schultz from Community Services, as well as various admin staff, finance department, and of course utility companies to obtain the usage information. And just to expand upon what Ms. Wells was saying in regards to the amount of time it took to acquire this data, being that there are a number of facilities that are not yet owned by the city, it required previous owner authorization to actually begin to contact utilities of this building, for example, where City Hall is leased by or from BDC. Saris Regis owns another a couple of our other properties. So contacting them, getting them on board, informing them what we're doing, having them authorize us to actually inquire as to their accounts, this was something that we had to do with each facility, with each utility, that we did not own as a as ourselves, the city. So now looking ahead at the results of this audit, we forwarded all the relevant data, all the inventory that we got over these past few months to our consultant in ICF. They punched it in their modeling and their number crunching and provided us with some numbers to look at to see where we've come from since 2007 to present day and where we can go from here. So as mentioned earlier in the presentation, there was the replacement of the HVAC system at Goleta Valley Community Center, the cool roof at the library. As some of you know, and probably all of us do actually, the City Hall lights were retrofitted, making a savings of about approximately 35% kilowatts per year. The street lights, all 37 signals were retrofitted with LED lights. Of course, we have our wonderful TDM program, which ends up helping us with an 18% reduction in our GHG emissions. Computers around City Hall have been set to have balanced power settings. The REACH code, which has us hit 15% above Title 24. And then we have low-flow plumbing fixtures installed in city facilities, including City Hall, as you might know, low-flow faucets, 1.6-gallon toilets, low-flow showerheads, and waterless urinals.
To go back to the reason that we have this specific list that's in on the screen is because these are the measures that we've taken since 2007. Well, I don't know if we specifically took them to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, but we certainly installed these aspects of facility improvements to reduce our electricity bill. So it was determined that that was the most cost-effective way to upgrade if we were going to upgrade already. And the reason that it's from 2007 is because, again, 2007 is our year, our benchmark. So we're taking that as our base year. And then when we look at savings, if you're going to do energy savings from what? You would say energy, if you were to stay at what you did and how you operated in 2007 and continue with those same exact operations while your population grows to 2020 and 2035, what happens in 2020? How much of an increase in your greenhouse gas emissions are you getting? And so then when we're looking at savings, we started calculating the savings for things that we've already done, because we still get credit for that under Assembly Bill 32. And that's some of the stuff that you see on the screen are those exact installations. And the City Hall lights saves us about $11,000 a year, and that's the in our electricity bill. So that's our estimate. So we'll go back next year and take a look and see if it's saving what we anticipate it to save based on the performance of the lights and the grant that we got from the state to replace these lights. So that's something that we'll do, but I just wanted to give you that context.
A couple questions, please. Thank you. As we brought up a couple facilities regarding the library and the cool roof, I'm not that familiar with the library to know, was there any daylighting that was incorporated with the new cool roof to reduce some of the, to provide ambient lighting to roof?
I don't think there was any daylighting. There was an original plan to do more than just a cool roof, and then with the cost estimates coming in and the funds that we had to work with, we just stuck with a straight cool roof.
As part of that, was there a structural study done that would indicate that the roof might be capable of being retrofitted with solar if and when the time comes?
I'm not sure about the answer to that question, but I'll make sure that our plan does include that, because that is an important element. It probably isn't in our draft right now, but I'll make a note of that, because that's important.
And the second one has to do with City Hall, which the city leases on an annual or whatever the basis is. Bless you. And you mentioned talking the installation, either through grants or on the city's dime, for motion detectors and more efficient T8s and things like that, fluorescent lighting. And just wondering, you know, not to skip too far ahead to the next item, but there's kind of a nexus between the idea of a new City Hall and how much investment should be placed in the current City Hall, because you're upgrading somebody else's facility. And though there's incentives there to reduce the city's utility bill, is there any kind of feedback loop from the landlord to acknowledge that you're increasing the value of the asset that may be vacated at some time?
So first, I think the priority for us here was the lead by example, and now. So we had an opportunity to receive a grant, and it had a timeline on it, and we're here now, and we don't have a date for a relocation. So the benefits from the electricity savings for that grant, even though it's not our building, was immediate. And that's, you know, that was part of the thinking. But then as far as it benefiting a future occupant, that's always a benefit as well, because, again, we were leading by example, and somebody else is going to have that benefit. And I think there were a little bit more negotiations back and forth with the building owner, and I don't know what those were.
The lease for this building has a tenant improvement prong, and I can't say that it applies to these things in the particular, but there are certainly some reimbursables mm-hmm. to the city as tenant.
I just wanted to add to Ms. Wells's comments that in addition to the upgraded fixtures that were installed and higher efficiency lighting, which not only achieves brighter lighting with less energy, it also qualified it upon project completion for rebates from Edison, which we're going to currently be underway to complete the rebate for those. So the rebates, as a result of all the completed work, are fairly significant. So that helps to offset some of those costs that I might add were really helpful to receive from the state. They were actually ARRA funds at the federal level that came through the state to the city, and we were one of a number of recipients here in the South Coast that received the grant, and we're all happy to be completing that work quickly and completing the work and the change out. Concurrently with the upgrades to City Hall, as Ms. Maruhat mentioned earlier, the streetlights improvement. There are approximately 84 streetlights in the city that were changed out, and the fixture that was changed out is referred to what's called a cobra head. And these are the streetlights that are present in some of the intersections. In fact, there's one right here when you leave City Hall and you turn right on Los Caneros, you'll see it. When it gets dark enough, you will notice that the light from that cobra head is significantly brighter than the previous cobra head that was there. And I mean like by a magnitude of like at least double. And it's really amazing to see the technology that's coming out now that allows us to use better, safer lighting at reduced energy costs.
And those particular light types were the most expensive lights. They were LEDs that the grant provided. So I think the City Hall costs were in the $20,000 range and the lights in the $80,000 range. For the 84 city lights or city street lights. So that's the significance of the cost, but the savings were also very substantial.
Okay. To continue, so what we decided to try and do with the data of the things that we have done since 2007, how many metric tons of carbon dioxide emissions do we avoid, which was 266. How can we make that tangible for, a regular Joe or Jane on the street to really understand what that means? And what we've quantified is that it reduces about 64 cars from the road with just what we've done so far to date, the City of Goleta Municipal Operations. That's really great. And a lot of these, as you'll see in this next slide, the dark purple and the lighter purple are actually state mandates. The Renewable Portfolio Standard, which actually contributes about 55% of what these reductions look like, is the 33% renewable energy requirement that utilities are going to have by 2020. With that, the Pavley survey was an assemblywoman who passed this initiative to require vehicles to have a certain mileage by 2020. X amount of miles per gallon. And with that, the low carbon fuel standard requires fuel to be comprised of less carbon. That's 14%. But what CETA Goleta should be really proud of is their TDM program, which helped bring 18% of those metric tons that we avoided just by our TDM program. And of course, we incorporated the street lighting retrofitting that Mr. Adamidas spoke of, water improvements, buildable energy improvements, and of course the library re-roofing project.
I had one question on this pie chart, please. It goes back to the renewable portfolio standard. That's basically all pass-through from Southern California Edison Grid meeting that target.
Correct.
Is the city plan, or is it embedded in any of city future documents or strategic plan to add to this percentage?
If you remember back to the slide where we were talking about the questionnaire.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions was for our administrative folks. So Michelle Green and her team were asked a series of questions about how they negotiate with SCE and how they position themselves with SCE to push on them to go above what is required and get cleaner sources of electricity to this area. So just by how far can we go and push on SCE to exceed what's already required? And I don't know if that answers your question directly, but that's a work in progress if it is.
It definitely isn't. My question had more to do with the City of Goleta perhaps taking a leadership role in incorporating renewable energy into their own capital projects.
Oh, I get you.
Thereby increasing the 33% to whatever that number.
Right. So if you're reducing your need from the grid, that's kind of the whole. So on one strategy is you're reducing your need through more efficient appliances. And the other one is maybe like solar ready projects. And yes, so there's a whole nother piece in the questionnaire that's all about how far do we want to go with solar ready projects that are just for, city facilities.
Thank you. So here is a bar graph that I'm going to walk you through a bit. The bar on the left, 2007, that's our baseline of 1,500 metric tons of CO2 a year. I'm sorry, emitted. And so 2020 on the right, that's what we're looking at. Well, this is 2007 emissions baseline. The 2020 level here is if we did nothing, if there wasn't the state mandates, if we didn't have a TDM program, if we hadn't installed the low-flow fixtures, if nothing had been done, in 2020 we would be at 1650. So what this is now we are actually 10% below our 2007 baseline, with all of those actions that we had just identified, the TDM program, the state mandates. So that puts us actually 10% under what our 2007 baseline is. AB 32 recommends, doesn't require, but recommends that municipalities go 15% under their baseline, 1990 in some cities, 2007 for us. So really that gives us a net difference of 5%, should we want to meet AB 32, which is, really puts us in a great position as we're 10% of the way there without really being overly enthusiastic about it. So what does this mean? Well, we've already lowered our energy bill, reduced our GHG footprint, and of course, leading by example for the rest of the city. We're fulfilling an SCE grant task that Ann has spoken of. Again, progress meeting towards Assembly Bill 32. And all this data is just going to be contributing and providing more context for our forthcoming Energy Efficiency Action Plan, which is going to be just for municipal operations, and then the Climate Action Plan, which will be for the city as an entire group.
So we're going to shift now from the audit mechanics itself to where we're going from here so that you can understand when you do get your energy efficiency action plan in early August, kind of what to expect. And there's a lot of work that has gone into this and a lot of work that's still going on. And I'm going to have Perrin Pellegrin kind of walk you through those steps because that's what she does. So she is the pro and can give you some context about, you know, what how do you look at a savings analysis? How do you identify these measures? How do you, aside from the questionnaire that we went through, but what does it mean when they say it's low cost, high return? What does it mean to be a medium cost? Those kinds of things from their decision-making tools for your go, no-go as far as when you're looking at your future buildings and operations. So go ahead, Perrin. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Wells. Chair and commissioners, thank you for having me. I kind of find this next topic the most exciting out of developing an energy efficiency action plan. And we'll move right into, you know, when this plan is developed, the energy efficiency action plan, what's it going to provide for the city? And it's going to provide some education and information that allows the city to make some educated decisions on if they want to move forward with energy efficiency projects, keep it as it is, provide some costing information, and up here on the slide you can see that one of the approaches would be to have a series of low, medium, and high cost projects that would be identified, and it would kind of allow the city to have a smorgasbord of ways to reduce that additional 5% if they feel fit, leave it as it is, or if capital projects are coming online, you know, it helps identify which ones need to be taken place first and receive a return on investment or an ROI. And so what do some of these savings look like? Here's an example of the lighting retrofit that took place here at City Hall. And 166 fixtures were retrofitted, and that included, you know, new electron ballasts, occupancy sensors, lamps. And the total cost of materials is about $15,000 with $12,000 worth of labor. And we had to pay federal prices, so it was a little bit more than the city maybe wanted to. And that resulted in about 35% of annual savings in kilowatt hours, which roughly saves $11,000 per year. And the payback time is approximately 3 years. So, you know, this breakdown really makes sense for the city. You know, I don't know how long you'll stay within the city hall, but to answer Commissioner Sheeler's question, you know, you'll probably get your payback before maybe moving on. So it's
actually, Perrin, our payback's immediate because the grant paid for the fixtures and the labor. That said, we wanted you to understand if we didn't have a grant, when it would pay itself back. So that 3 years is contextual for you.
Thank you.
How much is the city paying per kilowatt hour?
Our bills vary. I've seen it 5 cents, 14 cents, or even a little bit above. So if in high demand times, you're paying a little bit more off-peak hours, you're paying a little bit less. And for some reason, our streetlights just have different charges, and I'm not really exactly sure on how they break it all out, but it is kind of all over the board.
So in addition to having the payback, another great aspect of the EEAP is for the city to be able to determine the appropriate payback, meaning you do the lighting retrofit, it pays back in 3 years. Maybe you want to look at a more comprehensive energy efficiency project. The payback could be 3 to 6 years or 6 to 10 years. This report will allow the city to kind of identify what would be the most appropriate payback for the city. It could be a combination of all three of these. It could be one. It could be the other. But again, it provides an educated decision for the city in order to make steps moving forward with reducing GHGs and becoming a more energy efficient operation as a whole.
Commissioner, Chair Wallace and members of the commission, also just wanted to share with you an unexpected benefit from some of the upgrades that have taken place here at City Hall. I don't know if you know, but we have a backup emergency power generator in the rear of the building that's diesel operated. And when that generator goes into service, it is as a result of a interruption in electricity to the building. About 2 weeks ago, we had a power outage that lasted roughly, I believe the generator ran somewhere close to 14 hours, I was told. But because the draw and the demand, the load, if you will, on the building is less than what it started out with, the generator will actually run for a longer period of time now because it needs less energy to power up the building. So we thought we would share that with you. It was kind of one of those surprises that was a good one. Usually we see surprises that are not good ones, but this one was a good one. And so this is kind of, you know, really good things to share, not only with you, but with residents who have an expectation to see City Hall continue operations during times when there is no electricity.
So if we leave, are we going to take our generator with us?
We will. Actually, it's designed to do that. We did that very much in the design of what you see out there.
Great. Another aspect of the Energy Efficiency Action Plan will be some training modules that will be developed along with the city and Rosemary Law that's here today. And the training modules are focused on city officials and governmental officials, and there'll be about 4 training modules that last about 4 hours each. And one module will be for behavioral modifications. So this is simple things as of developing in-office signs for light switches to turn off, maybe training staff to turn off appliances that are no longer in use, very simple modifications that can be made with no cost or low cost initiatives. Easy ID projects, again, are kind of those low to no cost win-win projects. An example of this could be maybe an old computer is coming out and new computers coming in, making it a little bit more energy efficient, maybe putting some Energy Star settings in with your IT folks. Really simple projects that are easy, barely any impact on the budget. It also will focus on cost rebates and incentives. So we'll look at projects' costs, but it also shows ways to offset those costs. For example, Savings by Design, which is developed by Southern California Edison, it offsets some of the costs in some new construction or major renovations by initiating commissioning practices where you test your MEP systems prior to move-in, so you're ensuring that the building's working correctly. Surpassing Title 24 by 15% or more, which the city's already doing, and there's kind of a added effect. If you go beyond 15%, you'll acquire more incentives. But a handful of other rebates and incentives are out there, and Rosemary will go into that with these training modules. And then for performance benchmarks, This is identifying maybe LEED certification or Energy Star portfolio manager, where you can take the city facilities and input utility data and benchmark your building against similar type buildings or actually your own buildings. And again, to Commissioner Sheeler, this is a good way of taking utility data and having an ongoing working knowledge of how your building's performing. And you can actually set up the utility to feed into this Energy Star portfolio manager on a monthly basis. So really, your energy team can go into the website and see what your benchmark is compared to other type facilities. So that's just an example that could be used at the city. But all of this information will be provided in the training modules and allow city and government officials to kind of move forward and make some decisions moving on and benchmark building performance.
Excuse me, I had a question in terms of the training. Who did you indicate was going to be the beneficiary of this training?
City and government officials. And so city staff and government officials, excuse me.
And who qualifies as a government official in that case? Will the Planning Commission?
Bill would like to know if we're going to be trained.
If there was, what was that?
If it applies to the Planning Commissioners.
Yes.
It does. So the Planning Commission and City Council night, we had some of the logos up there. So this is all in the Southern California Edison grant. So they're very specific about who's getting trained. And one of the reasons, or one of the driving forces behind it, is that leading by example, which is sort of the motto of that grant, the way I see it. And if we can get everybody informed and have them have similar training modules and having the other agencies have access to our materials so that they can take our materials and morph them into something that might work for them or not, but at least they have these tools available to them directly, then that's the goal of the program, is just to make sure that people are informed and they have access.
You know, this is four modules, with each module being 4 hours. Is the package to attend the four times, or?
I can actually answer that, Chair Wallace. They're actually going to be 3 hours, and they can be staggered as much as you want. The grant doesn't stipulate that the same group of people have to attend all four.
Okay.
Granted, it would behoove the person participating to keep going and attend all modules, as it would just make the EEAP and the training more comprehensive. But anything specific to what those modules might look like, Mrs. Law can
with, without
those.
Doubt, it would be beneficial, but we are talking about 12 hours out of an employee time.
Exactly. We're hoping to have free food. That's bait.
We're available anytime.
So following the training, we're also doing more outreach with city staff, because we are talking about city operations and facilities. And we have to look at a goal, and I think we kind of touched on that, that we're at 10% in 2020, and we're thinking about, you know, do we want to go to 15% and have measures in our Energy Efficiency Action Plan, that's what we keep calling the EEAP, and have, do we want them to total 5%? Do we want them to have more? Do we, you know, want to have less? But there's no mandatory nature of this plan. It's just a plan. But it, the, you know, probably the bigger the menu, then the more information that we have from which to make decisions. But looking at a reduction goal is important here, just for us in developing the plan and knowing kind of how far should we go with the plan. So we have a lot of work to do still to kind of hone that list down to bring it to you in August. So we're still finalizing the savings analysis, and we're going to start with, you know, more rather than less on the list. We'll pretty much have everything that we can think of with information about the feedback from staff. And then we'll run calculations under various scenarios, and we will produce the Energy Efficiency Action Plan. And remember that the EEAP allows the city to make informed decisions moving forward.
and that it will provide a variety of scenarios for future implementation. I'm laughing because these guys thought that my slide was funny. I think it is too, but it's cute. So our timeline. We're going to do the training in the summer, and the Energy Efficiency Action Plan will be out in August, but we were scheduled to see you guys on August 13th. And we will do more outreach to staff, as I previously said. And then we will immediately after completing the Southern California Edison grant move forward into the more broader climate action plan that touches on all of the greenhouse gas sectors for all of the activities that occur within the city as opposed to just City Hall, but is a perfect, the EEAP is a perfect lead into the climate action plan because people will get a sense sort of what it is that it's doing and what are the benefits and the terms, and then when we move into the whole climate action plan for the community, it will just launch it in a good way, I think, from a understanding and knowledge perspective.
Ms. Wells, I had a timeline question. It's great that we're getting all this information. And one other thing that we've started, and I think we're going to revisit it, is the next Green Building Program workshop or something like that. I know this is somewhat related to all of that, and just wondering when that is scheduled for in relation to all these other items.
So that's on the agenda, and I'm going to have Ms. Saley respond to that question because she's got the whole agenda forecast.
Madam Chairman, in response to Commissioner Sheeler, the joint special meeting with the City Council is scheduled for Thursday, June 28th. And I believe we've communicated that to you and confirmed it. The second meeting, actually, and I'll discuss this later under Director's Report, but the second meeting with the Council is being pushed back to August just because of availability. Thank you.
So again, just a reminder that we're using this presentation as an opportunity to sort of launch our Energy Efficiency Action Plan because it is a lot of information to digest, and we are on a grant schedule, so we're hoping that this is helping and that when you get the plan, it will you'll feel like this was a well-used or well-spent time in your calendar. And also just a reminder that the Energy Efficiency Action Plan is a policy guide for city operations to base our future energy and building decisions and have those two kind of married together in a more comprehensive way rather than looking at things independently and not really understanding how it affects our bottom line. Thank you, and we're available for questions if you have any.
Thank you, staff. That was very good. You know, from time to time, the commission has asked for information to be given in advance of decision-making where possible and feasible. And I think this is a very good example of how that works. We were able to receive the information without a lot of pressure and to ask our questions, thereby cutting down time when real decision-making is called for. So I'm very appreciative. I think it's what we have requested in the past. Okay.
Comment. Promise not to leave my microphone on when I'm not talking. I don't even need a training for that. I just had a quick question. I think it's great that the local level is stepping up to do this because, as we've seen, there's the kind of debate on the national level about whether or not climate change is really even real. And it's great that we can sidestep that and focus on the things that actually save us money and make sense outside of that context of that great debate. But I'm curious if you are sharing information with other local municipalities about this project, if there's some sort of coordination between other cities like Goleta who are doing these same things to show the advantages and or the pitfalls that you might find along the way.
Thank you. That's a good comment and question. And we do collaborate with our neighbors. We do it on a couple different levels through the SBCAG committees because we are responsible for meeting the mandate under Senate Bill 375. So we're looking at greenhouse gases from a regional perspective and having to address that. So you're taking all the people from the various jurisdictions, putting them all in the same room at least once a month. And we're working on these issues, and generally those are the same people who are doing their local climate action plans or energy efficiency action plans. So we have dialogues at that level on a monthly basis and have been for years. And then we also do, because we're not the only ones with the SCE grant, and so we collaborate back and forth on lessons learned and how to be efficient and how to use our time wisely with the grant, and that's been helpful. And then the county is going first with their climate action plan. Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, giving, we meet with them quarterly, if not more, to talk about how their progress is going. I mean, officially meet with them quarterly on a staff level. And then they also host a sustainability group that meets with not just Santa Barbara County representatives, but also representatives from the Ventura area and the San Luis area, because they have sort of gone ahead of us as well. So we're getting a lot of input from our county neighbors to the north and the south. And then there's also a sustainability summit that is hosted by UC Santa Barbara and a bunch of other programs at UCSB that we network with. So they're great in helping us and working with us and hosting workshops and different outreach programs. So yes, I've probably left things out because there's been so much assistance to the city.
All right. I think that concludes our discussion on this item and the presentation, and I don't believe we're asked to take further action. Therefore, let's have a 5-minute break so that staff can prepare for the next agenda item. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Move on to our next item. Madam Clerk, item 3, please.
Item C is public hearing number 12-054-GC, general plan conformity determination for assessor parcel number 073-330-030, Los Caneros Road at Los Caneros Way, property acquisition.
Thank you. All right, Ms. Wells, are you our staff on this?
Yes. So this is a public hearing.
Open now.
Oh.
You could wait until after the staff presentation. It's up to you.
I just wanted to make sure that we didn't forget that it was a public hearing.
Well, if there's an option, let's go ahead and do it before I do forget. So we will open the public hearing on this issue and go forth with our staff report.
Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. Tonight's item is a general plan conformity determination for the city to make a purchase of a property or property acquisition that's located at the intersection of Los Carneros Way and Los Carneros Road, and it just so happens to be the vacant parcel that's right out our back door here. And as a reminder, we take property acquisitions and street dispositions and vacations to the Planning Commission for your report on the conformity of the action, the property transaction, with our general plan. And it's required under Government Code 65402. And the three specific pieces of that government code are reporting on the location and the purpose and the extent of the property transaction. So this particular property right out our door is 2.43 acres. It is vacant, and the land use is general commercial as identified in our general plan, and the zoning is similar at retail commercial, and it's outside of the coastal zone, and it's also outside of the 100-year floodplain. So there's a photo of the parcel on this slide, and it's facing northeast. You can see the foothills in the distance, and you can also see just the vacant nature of the field with mostly rural non-native grass species. So in our general plan, land use plan map, it shows the land uses, and you can see on the map and on this slide showing in the red circle is the triangle property, as we call it, and it's general commercial. And you can see the existing City Hall site, which is in a business park located right to the kind of southwest. And the ultimate land use that the city is looking at for this site is a future City Hall with some commercial. So there's, you can see how they're located right next to each other, and that's, you know, not an accident. So for your actions, today we're going to walk through the conformity findings that are the Planning Commission's responsibility that are kind of embodied in the resolution that's attached to the staff report that specifically walk you through the location and the purpose and the extent. So we'll start first with the location. The location from a conformity standpoint, it's, as I previously said, located across the street right here. Between Los Carneros Road and Los Carneros Way, kind of central in the city. There's no other development proposed at this site. There's no applications at this specific site, and it's vacant. And the general plan, most importantly, doesn't identify any particular site for a city hall, so it leaves that part open. And then the second part of the action is the purpose. And our general plan identifies the parcel as general commercial, and the allowable uses for general commercial in Table 2-2 of our general plan includes public and quasi-public uses as allowable. And that's what a city hall would be considered, public, quasi-public. And then our land use element, we have a policy, sub-policy LU 3.7, that kind of describes what commercial uses and public, quasi-public in this particular land use category, stating that the commercial type uses and the public type uses are more suitable than retail, trying to get away from the Fairview Shopping Center Camino Real in this specific land use type, and that would also be compatible with the city hall. And then the parcel is a located at a buffer between the traffic on Los Carneros Road and then residential. And the Willow Springs is an example of that residential. And this particular land use type is also desired to be located in this kind of buffer juxtaposed land use. And then in our public facilities element, the objective of policy one is to provide for a city hall, which is the specific use that the city is looking at for this parcel with some supporting commercial uses. And then switching to the extent, so the extent's 2.43 acres. And the staff report kind of goes through the math, the analysis of how 2.43 acres will support a city hall, but we did the math on that based on some calculations that are recommended in the public facilities element, sub-policy 1.3, and the site actually has the capacity to hold a building much larger than what we think we'll need in 2020. So we feel that the extent is suitable for the purchase under for your finding under the government code as its conformity with the general plan. So with that, we have a recommendation that you adopt the resolution that reports the acquisition is in conformance with the general plan pursuant to the government code. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Are there questions for commissioners? Then I go ahead and close. I'm sorry, Mr. Shuler.
Thank you. I do have some questions. I was just writing one down, so maybe I should just ask it. Well, this has to do with, this is general commercial, and I'm trying to understand really what that means. knowing that Goleta's going to have, according to the housing element, 8,000 new residents by the end of the general plan's purview, that there's also new housing that's expected to be built, whatever the project is, that's going to succeed the villages at Los Caneros and also Willow Springs 2 and 3 in addition to 1. So I'm just wondering, will the users of this general commercial be more likely the people who work in the adjoining business park or people who will be living in these infill surrounding residential neighborhoods of the future?
Could you be a little more specific with the question? Are you referring to what our vision of the future use would be?
Yeah, I understand that in addition to a new city hall, there's going to be additional general commercial use of the property. Isn't that correct?
Right.
The city will be a landlord and will be having tenants, and something is going to go into the footprint in addition to a city hall.
So we haven't specifically identified what would be in those commercial uses. We just know that their supporting commercial uses will be needed at this location. So we're planning and intending upon having some kind of supporting commercial use that's.
And who is this supporting? Will it be the new residents who live in this area, or will it be the people that work at the business park? I'm trying to figure out, just make sure that the right use is being deployed for this site based on what the future build-out of this area is going to look like.
And that hasn't been determined as of yet, those kind of specifics. We just know that there, again, that that buffer location of putting commercial next to residential on a fast street and then adding this new commercial building or public building will drive some need for the surrounding neighborhood. So that would be in the thought process. Mm-hmm. Of
If I may address this a little bit more, the city is actually in two different positions in this, because one is as a regulatory agency that regulates and designates what the land use designation and the zoning is of this site. The general commercial, as was previously stated, the uses that are identified for that land use designation and for instance, a parcel of this size doesn't lend itself to your larger shopping center type commercial uses. So it will be both by size and by the land use designation, limiting it to certain commercial uses that are unidentified that would be appropriate for this type of structure that will eventually be built, and also for this land use that's in between the transportation corridor and the residential use. Also, the city, as purchasing the site and potentially developing on the site, also acts in the capacity as landlord, as you had mentioned, which is different. It's a different perspective from the regulatory agency. As landlord, there, you know, there's leases, there's different legal instruments and different mechanisms in which to determine what uses will go in there. But the specific development and what uses are going in has not yet been identified, and is not right now. It's just a focus on the parcel itself.
I understand. Thank you. Also, a few more questions, Madam Chair, if I might. This has to do with PF 1.3, and it talks about the site for a future city hall being of sufficient size, and then it talks about 600 minimum of 600 square feet of civic center space is required per 1,000 population. Is that still the current standard, and is that standard truly applicable to the city of Goleta? Is there anything unique about our situation? Just wondering, in addition to that, I know that space is at a premium here in this current facility, and since the city was founded 10 years ago, I'm sure there's been growth of city staff over time, and I don't know how that trends with the growth in city population, but just trying to look ahead of what the optimal size for the future city hall will be, and just wondering, is this still a reasonable ratio that's used in PF 1.3?
Well, the general plan's not very old, relatively speaking, so it's 2006. And the projections have been pretty close to what we were looking at as far as our capacity and our growth curve. So I think these numbers were well thought out, and I think they still apply. But most importantly, you can see in the staff report that there's a pretty wide range of building size capacity at this site, which means that we have the flexibility to adjust as needed as we move, if we make the purchase, move forward with really looking at what our needs are and how we want the building to look. So it gives us a lot of flexibility at this location.
Thank you. I can see where that flexibility, where you could reconfigure space that may be used as tenant space for a time, would allow you to grow. This is not a question, but a request, and I hope it's okay. This is such a kind of confusing intersection of streets and projects that is proposed for this area. I mean, additionally, we've got, you know, a Target and vacation of Los Caneros Way and a new street going in Willow Springs 2 and 3 and a potential city hall. And the other things, is there any kind of map, and I'm not sure if it exists in the general plan, one of our maps that kind of lays out what the future of this circulation network is going to be like, because there's so many, seems like, moving pieces, and I'm just a little bit confused myself and just wondering if somebody can kind of anticipate, maybe this has already been done, what this map will look like, so as that we look all these projects in totality, we can kind of see how they all fit in rather than smaller pieces of a larger pie.
The transportation element tries to look at the growth of the city, all the growth, and it addresses the growth with a transportation improvement list. So there's policies and there's a map that addresses that growth, and including specific road segment improvements. So it's looking at that, at the full build out of that, what we're calling the triangle parcel, for its allowable uses, whatever they may be. So certain factors were applied. And the road system that's in place now is the road system that was used to look at full build out. So it didn't look at changes. It didn't look at if there's changes, that's a separate project at a separate path somewhere down the line. But the decision that's before you today is just with our existing transportation system with that existing parcel boundary. So a project that includes a general plan amendment that is not, you know, really part of what we're looking at here today. Right. It's just what's on the ground here. But yes, the general plan transportation element does take all of those projects into consideration, maybe not saying it's a city hall, but it's looking at the maximum development that would be allowed at that parcel based on certain heights and setbacks, et cetera.
And now the CIP and its related materials augment the general plan transportation maps in terms of future improvements.
Does the initiation of the Target proposal, though, doesn't that change?
I think on this one, we may be getting a little off point. Okay. Our role tonight is pretty narrow, Bill, so.
I understand.
Slap.
I'll step back just a moment.
If I may interject, Commissioner Sheeler, were you wondering if there was an actual aerial or a map that kind of, literally a picture of what the future was looking like? Not that I know of as such an aerial, but I imagine as a result of all these improvements happening in such a specific locality that such a map probably created
in the future. I think if my memory serves, you might take a look at some, ask Mr. Wagner about some of the CIP mapping, capital improvement program mapping. Okay.
And just to clarify this point, I understand it's difficult because we want to envision everything that potentially is going to go there and all the applications that we have on file and how is this all going to fit together and how is it all going to work. Unfortunately, some of those projects that are such in a speculative nature and require changes to the general plan that are still subject to the decision makers actually deciding whether or not those are going to occur. And so to a certain extent, you need to look at a snapshot of right now. This is where it is, and that analysis of how that may change through future projects is going to come in the future with those projects.
So the idea is that we should stick with what we're asked to do this evening, but I think we can also rely on future opportunities to raise the kinds of questions that we certainly will want answers to.
I just had maybe just one more comment,
sure,
and this
sure.
has to do with looking for consistency between, let's see if I've got it here. It's just an interesting juxtaposition that we had the early workshop, and now we got the hearing for things that are somewhat related because we're now talking about a facility, a public facility that's part of the City of Goleta's assets. Just wondering about the consistency of the public facilities and making sure that the Greenhouse Gas Implementation and Climate Action Plan are included somewhere in this. When you talk about your objectives under public facilities, is there any language that's going to talk about trying to meet the goals that we talked about earlier this evening?
Yes, and that will happen when, if we go through with the acquisition, and then if we, when we file for a project, then the environmental document will have to go through the general plan policy consistency. So it, that those will go item by item, just like any project goes through for compliance with the general plan policies.
Thank you.
And they are guiding, they would guide the future City Hall project, as that's what they're intended to do.
Okay, are there other questions? Then I think I can go ahead and close the public hearing, so we'll close that now. I want to say a couple of things in general, in form of discussion. When we began to celebrate our city's 10th year, a lot of people spoke about the idea of we didn't have a place to meet. We didn't have anything until even APCD was so generous as to give our city manager a cubicle, but not telephone access, or at least not a message to the receptionist that there might be calls for the city manager. For a long time then, we were meeting at the community center. Staff was packing everything up in the trunks of cars, moving over to the school. And in the meantime, we wanted a place, and that search took us to such things as an abandoned warehouse or two, a pizza place that was vacant, but still had its ovens and everything in place. So suddenly, the lease option here for the building behind us didn't look bad at all. It looked like quite a reasonable thing to do. And we got in there, and I think that was much better, especially for our staff. But it didn't have the meeting facilities, so we were still schlepping back and forth, all of us. And I think all of us are permanently scarred with the idea, the question constantly asked, are we at the right place at the right time with the right materials? It's kind of a nightmarish situation, and it's quite real. So when we came in here, everything was better because the public had a place to see what was going on in our city. We had a place to meet, and staff wasn't separated from their base of materials. But now, you can see from the general plan provisions, the general plan that was adopted in this room and worked on in this room, that the idea of a city hall, a public facility, was really important. And it was so important that while our method of operation was typically to ask many questions, to debate many issues, this I think was appropriate, and for our to have a lot of input on things, my recollection is that these provisions relating to acquisition of City Hall were a little bit different. Everybody understood because of our experience and our lack of the ability to fulfill certain functions in our own place. Everybody understood how necessary it was. So it's written in a way formulaic a little bit by size. That is certainly an estimate. And now we have this 10 years or a few less years from adoption of the general plan to show how we grow as a city and to understand the needs that we need to meet as a city. So to wrap it up, for me, there is no issue but that this has strong conformance with the general plan. The things that you raised, Commissioner Sheeler, and that we all think about, I think those are for the future, and I'm sure that we'll have a role in participating in helping shape this great thing. But as for conformance with the general plan and acquisition, I think it's a clear light. So if others have comments or a motion,
I'd like to go ahead and then make a motion to adopt Resolution 12, next in line, entitled Resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, reporting that the acquisition of assessor parcel number 073-330-030 is in conformance with the Goleta General Plan, Coastal Land Use Plan, pursuant to Section 65402 of the Government Code.
All right. Is there a second, please?
I'll second.
Thank you. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And that is a unanimous vote. I think that then that that is all that we need to do on this, and thank you very much, staff. That was a very nice item. Okay, so we can move now to the director's report, Ms. Saley.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the commission. Two things, one, schedule, but first, I believe everyone's received copies of Rosenberg's Rules of Order. City Council, a month or so ago, I think, adopted these. I've read through them recently, and they're really pretty clear. I wish I had these about 25 years ago. They give a lot of examples, so it's the kind of thing that I know I'll be keeping with me at every Planning Commission meeting. We will occasionally get into amended motions and things like that, but it's really pretty clear. It does kind of require a strong cup of coffee to get all the way through, but good information there. And then on schedule, just some things. If you happen to have a pen, a couple of these you might want to jot down. First, just as information, the Mariposa Senior Housing Project is at City Council tomorrow night. And you saw that about 2 weeks ago. Yeah, that was a pretty quick turnaround. We have a special meeting next Thursday, a week and a half from now, the 24th. That will be the Willow Springs 2 project, was mentioned earlier. And there'll be a short item, which is actually a follow-up to the action you just took relating to the Triangle parcel. It's an amendment to an existing development agreement, and we'll go into the details at that hearing. It shouldn't be a long agenda item because we expect Willow Springs will take a while. We have
on the Willow Springs, is that an information or a decisional item?
It's a public hearing.
Okay.
And the environmental impact report and all that, those sorts of documents were posted on the web Friday or Saturday, I believe it was. And the staff report, we should be getting you that information. There are a lot of implementing documents, exhibits, resolutions, et cetera. So just be prepared. Your packet will be considerable.
Thank you for the word.
A lot of it is, I mean, just the nature of the beast, somewhat repetitive, but legally all that's required. We have a meeting scheduled for June 11th. That still is on the books. June 25th, the next big project in line after Willow Springs is the Westar mixed-use project right across from the marketplace on Hollister. Mm-hmm. And that, what we anticipate doing is going out to the site, and we're working out the details, but going out to the site because it's a big piece of property, and it's important that the commission really has a good understanding of what the lay of the land is, and hearing primarily from the project architect about what is proposed. And we will even, we've asked them to do some mowing of where the streets, the roads will be, and we'll have some story poles so you can tell where the major buildings will be, just all to help you visualize what's proposed. Then on Thursday, I believe it's a Thursday, could be wrong, June 28th, a joint meeting with City Council we mentioned earlier on the Green Building Program. And there will be a follow-up meeting. It was tentatively scheduled in July, but ran into some problems with that. So we're looking at August 23rd, having the second joint meeting with the City Council on the Green Building Program. So question to you, and I understand you probably can't answer it right now. Are you available on August 23rd? That is often vacation time for people. And we'll send you an email. I also intend to, where'd it go? Sent you one of these probably a week or two ago. This is a work in progress, not quite ready to send you a new one. But hopefully by the end of the week, we'll send you one of these. But regardless, we'll be sending you an email to see if you're available August 23rd. It's always a challenge scheduling joint meetings. So that's what we see for the foreseeable future. get you an updated projection report once we feel it's pretty solid. We don't want you making plans and changing, having to change them. So that is it for the director's report. Happy to answer any questions, or we may be ready to adjourn.
Thank you. Commissioners, do you have comments to make this evening?
I'll just make a quick comment that I think the triangle parcel is great for City Hall, and it I think will be great in the future when we have to look at all the development that is proposed for that area to know that that's been taken care of.
I couldn't agree more. All right, are we ready for an adjournment motion?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right, let's do it. She'll hold you. She'll hold